Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women in Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today I'm really excited. Esther has a great guest in studio, and that is Greg Osgood. Greg Osgood, since 1995, has been the founder and president of LPG Investments Incorporated and mortgage broker at University Investments in Palo Alto, California. Greg has closed close to $3 billion in mortgages for high net worth individuals and families. Good afternoon, Esther. How are you?
Hi, Eric. It's good to talk with you again. Everything is okay, but gosh, these are such odd times, aren't they?
Yeah, it's still weird, right? we've talked about this before. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. We're still under quarantine here in California. Things are slowly opening up, but for the first time in my life, my town and small city are on curfew because of all the riots going on.
Yeah.
And I have never been in a place where we've been under curfew. Have you, Greg?
Actually, I have on a few occasions. I go back to a time when that did, in fact, happen. So
Greg's older than me.
Oh, hey, but wait a second. Esther, listen.
Yes.
I heard Greg brought you chocolate, so why are you being mean?
I know. Well, because I have the chocolates in my possession now.
Yeah, well, now it's just all done, yeah. Oh,
they're,
man,
on this side of the desk.
Welcome to the show,
yeah,
Greg. You know, you see what I deal with every time
we get
together.
It's nice to meet you here today.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you too, Greg. This is fantastic. I will say, from your bio, you sound like a powerhouse within the mortgage industry. Holy cow. Close to $3 billion in mortgages. That's a whole lot of home, I suppose. Well, in California, maybe that's only like three or four homes. I'm not sure. I'm in Omaha, so
being in a real high-end area, you know?
Absolutely.
The rising tide and all that.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate around here.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Esther, I wanted to ask you, obviously I've just met Greg. Why did you bring him on the show today?
Well, it's another unusual time in the mortgage industry. We have really low rates that is touted a lot in terms of how low the interest rates are again. And yet it's a challenging time economically. And I wanted to talk with Greg about what his experience is right now, because he and I have worked together for a number of years. We went through refinances together in 2019, way back when, like 7 or 8 months ago. And we're going through them again, and it's a completely different experience. So I thought it was great to bring Greg on. Before we dive into that, Greg, I just wanted to say, what has kept you doing mortgages for 25 years?
That's a good question. You know, when I got this business going, you know, I had young kids at home, and I'm thinking it's just going to be sort of a routine thing. I just want to have something that's routine and predictable. And what I found out was it's actually more complex. And actually, the thing that I thought that was simple, you know, a mortgage is just like this simple box. It's actually a Rubik's Cube. And you twist and you turn the sides of it, and you find so many different ways as a financial tool. And I think that's what kept me interested over time. We're in a great area for real estate, and it's obviously a great area for mortgages. But what I really like is just the complexity and the challenge and working with the people in what is really an amazing financial tool, along with all the other financial tools that people have. So that's what's kept me going.
I know. It's similar to the work that we do here. It's your solving puzzles. So I love that Rubik's Cube analogy. And especially, you know, the podcast is Women and Wealth. And for many women, the home is a huge part of their asset base in life. So, Eric, that's another reason why I've invited Greg on with us today. So
fantastic.
With that, Greg, if you could talk a little bit about the current interest rate environment and under what circumstances should someone think about refinancing?
Sure. We started out this year with just some things happening in the market that dragged the rates down. And so those people that we'd actually even been working with just 6 months ago all of a sudden became clients active again. And that would be, you know, taking us to early March, really before the health crisis started, or at least the shelter in place portion of the health crisis. And so the rates had dropped so far, you know, all of a sudden we were seeing rates that a year earlier, 30-year fixed 4%, now all of a sudden we're getting down close to 3%. The 10-year Treasury note yield had dropped so far down to unprecedented levels, below 1%. You know, today even looking at it, it's about 70 basis points. So low, rates so good, just, you know, purely based on the math, people would come back in and wanted to do a refinance. And we would make, you know, obviously a lot of savings. So purely rate driven. When the shelter in place order began and things would happen in the, you know, sort of COVID-19 world now, the federal government started to pass some things such as regulations, even allowing people to do things like forbearance on their mortgage, you know, where they could elect without really having to show proof of it for the first time really in our history, they could have forbearance on making payments. Well, that's changed the rate environment some because when people go to forbearance, in fact, as of today, I read it was about 5.5 million people have registered into forbearance programs.
Wow, that's a lot.
And that represents almost $1.5 trillion monthly of mortgage payments. So you can imagine the ripple effects, and it gets lenders nervous. They've started to add some extra costs on. So, you know, sort of as a rule of thumb, you can look at the 10-year Treasury note. And if you add about 2 to what a 10-year Treasury runs at, you'll normally get where a typical conforming 30-year fixed rate would be. So if a person saw 10-year treasuries at 2, add about 2 to that, there's your 4% rate. That's a normal world. Now all of a sudden, we're seeing that the 10 years dropped so low, you should be looking at rates that should be 2.5%, but they're actually closer to 3.25, 3.5. It's just the fear even within the banking and lending community about additional costs that they'll have for these forbearance programs, delinquencies, and such. So that's kind of where we are with respect to that. In terms of the costs and benefits, that question, Esther, I always tell people, you know, I know it's kind of useful to have a rule of thumb. You know, if you say a half a percent drop in rate makes sense to take a look at what you got. I just prefer to do the math. I just prefer to look at what a person's balance is. I mean, if we see somebody with a $1 million mortgage, it's different than a person with a $300,000 mortgage. A quarter of a percent to a $1 million mortgage has a lot more impact in dollar amount than a quarter percent to a 300. So I just tell people, let's just 5 minutes, we can do the math. Always the best rule, do the math.
What about those who have a low rate now, but it's going to expire, it was, say, fixed for 7 years, and that seven-year period is coming up in the next few years, but it's still a low rate. What would you recommend that someone do? Should they wait for 2 more years and keep the rate now, or lock in again now at potentially even possibly a higher rate, but it's guaranteed for longer?
Always a really good question. And what it brings in is that question about what is the person's time horizon? I mean, are they going to be in that house for 5 or 10 years? I mean, I hate to see people do a 30-year fixed rate mortgage and pay the premium when their plan is to move in 5 years after the kids are done with college. These kinds of examples happen all the time. A woman last week, daughter's graduating college, wants to do a refinance. We can make sense out of it financially, economically. And yet the question is, she's so fixed on thinking about 30-year fixed. Why not do something for a shorter period of time at a lower rate? Those are the ways to, I think, look at that question. And so I would always just tell people, take your mortgage out of the desk drawer or, you know, go in, you know, online and review it. And especially in times like this, because people kind of get emotional and they forget to go back to the basics, which is have a plan, review what you're doing in your plan. And I would say with a mortgage, it just pays to look at it. It changes so often in the environment out there. Look at it once every 6 to 12 months, even if that's not that much effort. And it can usually result in a lot of savings or at least potential. the person that's expiring in 2 years, they ought to look
They're
at...
They're not personally expiring.
No, no. That brings up a whole other issue about, you know, when you've got an inherited property and you want to do a mortgage. But no, this is just the question of how soon do you pull the trigger? And it bears on how long are you going to be in the house? Don't wait till the last minute. These things, especially in this environment, should be taking a few months to get done. And I wouldn't wait until the last year. I always basically tell people, get going with it before you get to your last year. The last year may not give you as many options at all.
And you alluded to it, but what is a client's underwriting experience now in this current environment?
Well, let's just say that it's a whole lot easier if you are sort of the more vanilla, you have a pay stub, you get a W-2 every year, and that's, you know, really what represents your income. Or if you happen to be the type of borrower that would have lots of dividends and interest and, you know, recurring capital gains, if you're on that, you know, the wealthier side of that equation. But if you're self-employed, that's where it starts to get tricky, because what really banks fear now is, does a person have a job? Do they have a company? Is their company still getting any revenue? Do they have any deposits? So I have people that are in self-employed refinances right now. We are literally having to show what they've done in the last 10 to 30 days, which, you know, the normal practice, the manual, if you go by the manual, says, take the last 2 years, average a couple of tax returns. That'll give you a fix on a self-employed person's income, you know, whether it's a person that sole proprietor, has an LLC, so forth. Now they want to see that there's actually deposits being made within the last 30 days, which is tricky because a lot of people that are successful in self-employment, it can be seasonally related. There are, you know, big projects they're working on, and in 1 month they'll make, you know, what would look like 4 months worth of income. So what I'm having to do, and this goes back into just really good planning and working with good advisors when you do your business, we do sort of engineering. And I ask a person what their deposits look like they're going to be for a month. And if we're not going to be ready to close for another month, I might actually recommend to somebody, make the deposits later instead of today, because we want to look good at the right time. So it's taken the sort of long-term way of averaging income, and in underwriting, they want to see immediately where it is. Of course, with people that have a pay stub, you know, somebody that works for Facebook and is receiving as an engineer there, you know, a paycheck every week with a pay stub, that's very easy to document. So the underwriting is more difficult or trickier nowadays regarding that.
What about, so you mentioned someone who's self-employed. What about those who are retired? Obviously, then you don't have a pay stub, or who are divorced and don't have income other than alimony?
Well, with those people, you know, again, that is other income. And so it's just all relative. The amount of income that they have, and it can be from the alimony, it can be in retirement from Social Security, but also investment income. Just, you know, their asset base of investments is also sometimes in the way that we can do it factored in. We can actually impute a form of income to them based on their assets. And so, you know, it just, again, it pays to just walk through the numbers and look and see what it is. But there are ways to do those loans, Esther.
Yeah, and I noticed as I mentioned early on in this podcast that you and I had done refinances 6-7 months ago, and it's been amazing to me because I was around, obviously, in the subprime mortgage crisis. What was it like before getting loans? And after that crisis, getting loans, and now, and I thought that was a huge step up in qualifying, starting in 2009 or 10. But now it seems so much more challenging. I mean, I know that the information we've been needing to provide on the part of clients, who just, again, 6 or 7 months ago, it just flew through, basically. And that's all about lenders having a lot more anxiety in this economic environment. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's definitely that there's that's going on. And again, it's just how they can get comfortable with what a person's financials are. And so we have to take more time, you know, get that prepared. But, you know, we are getting it done. And it's like anything else, you need good help with being able to do that. I think that we're able to provide that nowadays, but it's good to work with experienced people in anything that you're doing when it comes to financial advice.
And one of the questions that comes up a lot is clients saying, oh, I saw this rate online or on TV. Can you speak a bit to that type where it looks like, you know, self-directed mortgage, if you will, versus what you offer? And then in terms of the fees inherent, because so many of them say no fee, and yet they're not nonprofit organizations. So can you speak to some of those issues?
A lot of times what it is there might be one case, because there are so many variables in a person's loan file. There might be one case where with the perfect credit score, the maximum amount of equity, the lowest debt-to-income ratio and looking at their income, the highest amount of reserves, where a lender could probably, you know, point to something in a loan that they did that's close to what they advertised. And I suppose that's, you know, for legal protection too, they better be able to go and fall back. And yet I call those myself sometimes and just doing my own kind of test of the market, or oftentimes clients will do that and we just don't end up with the same, you know, results. And so following advertisements is a tricky thing. You have to do a lot more investigation. Normally what's best for anybody, whether they're working with a mortgage broker or just walking in the retail operations of every main bank on their street, is to comparison shop. Is, you know, just see what other people are offering in the market. And that starts to narrow down to where, you know, you'll finally find the deal that'll make most sense for you.
How do you find a mortgage broker?
I guess that's a good question. Mostly, it's talking to other good financial advisors. Most people are working with someone that's in either accounting or financial advising, wealth advising, stock brokering. It can even be just their local personal banker who, you know, obviously within a bank, they're going to probably recommend their own bank. But what we try to do is to just offer a lot of different shopping on people's behalf. We work with a lot of lenders. We're constantly surveying the market and just trying to find, we don't want to just always get the average deal. You know, we're trying to beat the average deal all the time. And that just takes shopping, comparison shopping.
And what types of mortgage products are available in the marketplace now versus, well, let's just start with now.
Well, we have, you know, again, there's always the standard 30-year fixed and 15-year fixed, 10-year fixed, things where the loan is amortizing more rapidly. And then we now, we've had for, you know, many, many, many decades, adjustable rate mortgages that are for a fixed period of time that can serve a good purpose in some instances. Where there has been the change over the years there, Esther, has been since the Great Recession, going back to 2008, a lot of the types of programs no longer were what they would call a qualified mortgage. A qualified mortgage came to be defined after 2008 as the type of mortgage that any lender that offered it would get kind of a safe harbor from lawyers and lawsuits and class actions, because it was on its face something that was justifiable. So things like negatively amortized mortgages, where you would, you know, take an application and the borrower would just state what their income was versus ever having any investigation about what their income really was. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things that backfired, you know, helped cause things like that Great Recession, or at least the mortgage end of that. So those things have become harder to obtain. In fact, you can't obtain negative amortized loans anymore. But like, they did away with things like prepayment penalties. And you still can find things like interest-only loans, which sometimes can serve a purpose for certain types of borrowers that would like to keep their principal working elsewhere.
Yeah, I know in my experience working with women and one in particular who knew she was going to move out of the area, you referenced this in one of your examples, in terms of the timeline somebody will be in the home. And it was part of her plan. She would move out of the area in X number of years. And we did do a refi into an interest-only product because just keep her options open for... It wasn't at all about, oh, we can maximize your return in the market or anything like that. It was given we also, and I know you do too, look at what gives the client the most flexibility, at the same time, the most security. And this allowed her just to stay in her home here in this higher priced area, maintain those payments. And then when it was time to go, you know, the loan just got paid off and she moved on. So
that's always the interesting question. I mean, it's like, how much do you want to apply towards your loan? There's so many different types of programs and, again, ways that you can twist and turn it to see how does it fit into your big financial plan. I mean, one of the biggest mistakes that I see people make is to never really determine what it is they're trying to achieve. Oftentimes, it's just for a more emotional reason that, you know, it can be everything from, well, my parents, my grandparents did always a 30-year fixed. Why should I do anything different? Well, normally because it's going to cost you a lot less to do something different, and you may have no more risk. So why pay more? That's always the question that I have, is why pay more? People often, I'll give you an example. A woman divorced 2 years ago. I did a mortgage for her to help her take the equity out of the house at that time to be able to stay in that house. She had two kids getting ready to go to college, wanted to stay in that house. So we did that and got that all organized. As part of the settlement, she had the house, along with the debt on the house, and as well some investments. But then her question was, should I just take and pay off this entire mortgage? This came up recently, and it was because we're in a time with, you know, so many health crises, economic crisis, you know, social crisis. And it's just, it makes people like they wake up at night and want to know, what can I do to like relieve my strange thoughts?
Right. Well, like it's a lot about like, what can I do to control this situation? Yeah. There's so much uncertainty. What can I do to control it?
They think they're making something go away. And the idea of a debt is like something that's hanging over them. And what I always tell people is, you know, your house is like a bank. You're making big deposits into it. Sometimes you can make withdrawals from it in the way that you do the financing. And if you really look at it, it's cheap money, and you have to compare it to the other costs. So in this example of this woman that had divorced, I said, have you talked with your financial advisor? Because it sounds like you're going to take the money. It was about a $750,000 mortgage. So you're proposing, you have $1 million in investments post-divorce now, managing it yourself, good job. You're going to propose to take 3/4 of that, 750,000 of that million, and pay off your mortgage. So let's talk, at least in the big plan, what's your return? If you're getting, and when we finally kind of conferenced in her financial advisor, she's over the last 10 years, she's got a better than 10%. And she's very conservative, maybe an 11% return in a very conservative portfolio. And she's paying on her mortgage 3.5%, you know, after any tax benefit, 3%. And I'm saying your income is close to 11%. Your expense is close to 3%. The difference is over 7%. On 750,000, if you take 750,000 out, you've just taken away 52,500 a year. That's that 7% difference between your income and your expense. Why not consider, I know you want to sleep good at night, maybe this could be part of your plan. Just pay bigger principal pay downs of your mortgage for many years and keep that $750,000 working for you. Mm-hmm. It's the math usually that helps people to come away from just the emotional part of the decision. Mm-hmm. And they can look at it and say, if I do it. So it's about planning and really working the plan.
Yeah, and I know it's so interesting because Eric knows too, and others, the listeners, we talk a lot about this emotional part of financial decision making and how our brain will try to think, because sometimes, you know, all of this, these types of discussions, they can be hard to step oneself through. For many people, they get overwhelmed, they're stressed to begin with. And so that's why it's so helpful to pause and to connect with others to help one think through these things and just look at the math, et cetera. Are there ways that you have seen clients hurt themselves with their mortgage planning and not realized it? That was a good example. Any others?
Yeah, that's an example. I mean, I go back to just recent meetings that I've had. I met with some people actually a woman and introduced by her sister. And she said, I'm going to give you a courtesy meeting because my sister said that you did well by her. So I knew immediately that that might really just be a waste of time. But I said, let's do this. And so this is a very successful woman, private equity partner, and doing very well. And we worked through all the numbers. That's really what I like to spend time doing with people. And we came up with it would be $400 savings at almost no cost to do a refinance.
$400 over what period? A month.
1 month, yeah. $5,000 a year. And her response was, and this is true in our world, people get very busy, it was, I'm not sure that's worth my time. And I know she's very, you know, well off. But I said, is there a favorite charity that you like? And she said, yeah, I don't know, American Cancer Society. I said, good charity. I said, well, maybe that money could be better served going that direction because you just defaulted to, you know, effectively Wells Fargo in your mortgage. If you're going to pay them an extra $400 a month, so look at the math, you know, determine if there's, you know, if it's worth your time. But usually those numbers add up big over time.
I love that example, Greg, because it's a way to look at the same situation from just a different perspective. What a great question, because maybe $5,000 didn't mean that much to her, but could it mean something very important to something else she cares about other than her bank? I want to thank you so much, Greg. Was there anything else you wanted to share? Be sure to pop in before we close.
I think that we've covered a lot here, and I would just say that I hope during these times, people will take their, you know, emotions out of it to some extent and just go back to their plan and try to work their plan, talk to their advisors, see where they're at. I think people will sleep better at night if they've actually done their planning. Don't try to hide from it.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I know that you've also always been really good. If I have a client who does have a mortgage with another provider and is being approached with a certain type of recommendation, that you're always really good in terms of I will reach out to you because you're closer. And that's what the importance of how we work with clients is, to have a network of skilled professionals and say, Greg, this is what the choice they're being offered. How does that sound? And you'll say, that sounds great. And you'll never try and push or horn your way into something that isn't appropriate. And at the same time, you can also, you've also shared what the other choices are in other cases. So I want to thank you so much. Greg is very, you can hear in his voice, he's very calm when working with clients and stepping things through in this really challenging environment where things have been difficult. And any financial transaction to do with one's home, it does carry a lot of emotional weight often. Not for everybody, but often it does. And he is very well-paced and calm and thoughtful and intelligent working through these transactions. So if people wanted to reach you, Greg, how would they do that?
650-678-6066.
Very good. And they can also find you at University Investments.
Yes, they can. Website. University Investments, Palo Alto, California. Universityinvestments.com.
Thank you so much. And for us here at Gates Pass, if you're not sure what a plan is or what whether planning might be right for you, that's where we fit into the picture in terms of offering assistance with people making significant life and financial decisions within the context of their overall plan for now, soon, and later. And our website, you know, is gatespassadvisors.com. We have access to, if you'd like to reach out to us, there's a contact me button. And you can complete that. And if you'd like to hear more of our podcasts, there's a podcast link. We do webcasts regularly. You can be on our newsletter list and also current market news. So there's a lot of content that there for you. And we're also always happy to be available to answer your questions. So Eric, with that, I will turn it back to you.
I appreciate it. Greg, thank you so much for being here. Esther has had many guests on the show, and that's what I love about working with her is that she has a huge team that she works with and that she can refer people to when they have questions. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Eric. Thank
Esther, you're amazing. I already know that. The audience knows that. But I'm going to say it again. Thank you so much for bringing Greg on.
Absolutely. Who knew we could talk about mortgage for so long?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure we could dig a lot deeper, too. So maybe a future
podcast.
You know,
I've stayed in it for 25 years.
Right. There you go. Absolutely. All right. And the last thank you goes to you, the listening audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. And if you think right now, I bet there's somebody that needs to think about refinancing that mortgage. This is a great time, and maybe they just been putting it off, or maybe they thought, maybe it's not going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it. Just listen to the podcast, share this with them, and maybe just have that conversation. Again, thank you so much for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.